As summit season concludes, critics are reflecting on Australia's regional diplomacy skills. George Megalogenis is an author and a journalist. He's just written a piece for the New York Times critiquing what he sees as political self-indulgence in Australia at the cost of our standing in Asia. He joins us now on Drive. Welcome.
How are you, Patricia?
I'm good. Now, you've argued that Australia is turning inward at a time when we're seeing a global power shift towards Asia. Can you talk me through why you see that as a problem?
I think we've reached almost the tipping point with the last leadership challenge in August. And I think the rest of the world sort of let out a collective sigh. There go those Australians again. Now, it would be good if we could go back to August and alert the Liberal Party to the following risks. That the free trade agreement we had with Indonesia would be put on ice because Scott Morrison, the new Prime Minister, would, in an attempt to hold the seat at Wentworth, flag the idea of moving the embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. I think the country, as it sees itself now, is so focused on the internals of the two political parties that we've lost sight of what's actually going on in our neighbourhood. For a couple of hundred years, we've been lamenting the fact that we're in the wrong part of the globe. We are in exactly the right place you want to be in the 21st century in Asia, but we're not involved at the moment in any of the big discussions in the region about the architecture for the 21st century. And I think this is one of those foreseeable but still not calculated costs of the leadership churn in Canberra.
So do you believe that there are missed opportunities for Australia? What can you point to?
I think there's a couple of things. Let's dial it back to when Tony Abbott stormed into office in 2013. Almost immediately, because he had the turn back the boats policy, he rubbed up against Indonesian sensibilities there, because the Indonesians don't really want to be housing 10, 20, 30, 40,000 asylum seekers en route to Australia. Now, there was a bit of discussion behind the scenes about the turn back policy, and the relationship was going okay until it was revealed that President Yudhoyono and his wife had been tapped by Australian intelligence agencies a couple of years earlier. It had taken Malcolm Turnbull the best part of the 3 years as Prime Minister to sort of return to normal relations with Jakarta. And the first thing Scott Morrison does, literally, is blow all that up again. But he wasn't thinking of Jakarta when he did it. That's one of the transactional costs now of changing leaders routinely, that you get a new incumbent that almost has to learn foreign affairs on the spot, because they've got no prior experience in it. And all our relationships have to be reset while we wait for the new leader to grow up in public.
At the conclusion of summit season, how do you think Australia performed on the international stage? I mean, Scott Morrison is new to this, but did he do a good job?
I think with the hand that was dealt to him, and that is getting the leadership in the most unusual circumstances, I think he obviously made a mistake with the Israeli embassy. I think going into the G20, it was about minimising the risk of embarrassment. Now, he can't have helped what Donald Trump asked him, which is what happened to Malcolm. And he can't have helped the fact that Angela Merkel was sitting there with her briefing notes with a photo of the new prime minister, and she was doing a sort of a quick swat before she got to meet him with the cameras rolling. He can't have helped those two things, but how do you see us at the moment? I think people are bemused. I don't think they're laughing at us yet, but I think they are bemused.
Immigration is an increasingly contested area in Australia. There are arguments around congestion in some of our major cities. You've made an argument in favour of migration through the prism of our regional standing. Can you talk us through that?
We've got, at the moment, still the best destination for migrants in the region. Skilled migrants from both India and Asia that are choosing to leave rising nations are picking places like Australia, Canada and the United States. They're not going to Britain anymore, but they're certainly coming to us, and they're going to Canada and to the United States. The Americans are bringing the drawbridge up because they can't handle complexity in the 21st century. We've done so well up until now that we're now in a position where half the country is either first or second generation migrant. You're either born overseas or you're a local with at least one parent that was a migrant. We haven't been in a situation like that since the 1880s. So just in terms of our demography, we are a majority migrant nation thereabouts. In Melbourne and Sydney, our two biggest cities, it's not 50% of the population that's first or second generation. It's more than 60% in both those cities. And our ethnic face today in Melbourne and Sydney is predominantly Eurasian. Asian migrants are the single largest group. The Indians are the largest group in Melbourne, and the Chinese are the largest group in Sydney. If you were to design a country from scratch that had the best of the 21st century, it would be Australia. The difficulty now we've got, the program's been running at these elevated levels now for about 15 or so years, introduced by the Howard government. There's a feeling in the country that middle Australia can't keep up. It's not just the congestion story. It's that our middle class can't keep up with the new arrival, because the new arrival is not landing where our parents landed, Patricia. They started at the bottom, and you sort of measured the success of the immigration program through the achievement of the kids, the Australian-born kids of non-English-speaking migrants. Today, the migrant starts at the middle or the very top, and that's essentially what you get from a skilled program. And we're getting twice as many skilled migrants as we were getting migrants from family reunion in the 80s and 90s. So I think the difficulty now is, can our political system raise its standards in terms of service provision, not just infrastructure, but health and especially education, to keep up with the expectations of the sort of 21st century migrant in Australia? It's a very, very difficult policy question, because the instinct on the conservative side is just to stick with WA and Queensland, which are wary of Asian migration, and the instinct of the Labor Party is to stick with the southeast, which is not only pro-migration, but pro-tertiary educated, pro-younger person. When you get divides like that in your political map, you can very quickly get to a situation where the Americans and the British already are, where you say, let's stop globalization for a few years until everybody sort of comes back together again. Once you do that, in this environment, you actually lose touch, and it's very difficult to put it back together again. It's very difficult to put an open society back together again once you've closed the door.
Where do you see this conversation heading? Do you think there is a political appetite for the outlook that you're advocating for?
One of the things I'm arguing now is to actually reframe the discussion. The discussion should be about service delivery. So if you think congestion is a problem, don't cut the intake. Build ahead of the arrival of migrants. If you think there are too many people coming to Melbourne and Sydney, not just from overseas, but internally from places like Queensland, South Australia and the like, maybe you should think about decentralisation. If you're worried that the migrant is starting at the very top of your social structure, maybe you need to raise the standards of your public education system so our kids can keep up. They're the discussions I think we need to have. Accept the challenge of diversity and accept the challenge of being a Eurasian nation of the 21st century. As I say, the alternative, and we've tried this once before, what was the White Australia policy? The White Australia policy was restriction by race and also a tariff wall. We're obviously never going to go back to the tariff wall again, because our economy is tailor-made for the 21st century in terms of our minerals and also our education services. You can't shut those two things down. People don't want to shut those two things down, but you can't have those two things and not have migration.
George Megalogenis, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
And to you.
George Megalogenis there is an author and a journalist joining us here on RN Drive.